In the very beginning, I would like to also introduce you to the members of the evaluation committee. The first external opponent is Professor Jocelyne Chanusseau from Grenoble Institute of Technology, France. Welcome. The second external opponent is Associate Professor Robert Jensen from University of Tromsø, the Arctic University of Norway. Welcome. The internal opponent and administrator of the committee is Professor Katrin Franke from the Faculty of Computer Science and Media Technology here at NTNU Gjøvik. Welcome, Katrin. I would also like to inform you all that the trial lecture is streamed and recorded, and I would like to remind you to turn off or at least mute your electronical devices before we get going. The title of the trial lecture is Video Scene Understanding. Please, Hilda, the podium is yours.
Great. So this is the title of my trial lecture today. So I have to stay here. Okay. Yeah, okay. I will start. The title of my trial lecture today is Video Scene Understanding. So what is video scene understanding? First of all, what is scene understanding? So for us human, scene understanding is the ability to visually analyze a scene to answer questions like, for example, what's happening? Why is it happening? What happened next? Or how do I respond to what I'm seeing? Now, for us human, this comes automatically. But for the computer, it does not. So the aim of video and the scene understanding is to automate the process. Here's an illustration. So this is a snippet from a badminton tournament. For us, if we see this, we know right away what are the objects that are interesting, what are the objects that are not interesting, because we know the context. So we can recognize there are a lot of objects in there. There are the texts, there are the audience, there are the players that are inside the green square. And because we know what are interesting, our eyes will only track the movement of the players that are inside the green square. So, and then according to how they play, we understand the behavior, and then we will be able to describe, okay, one player is faster than another, and so on. So the aim of video scene understanding is to make this reasoning process that we have when seeing this automatically. A lot of applications for the video scene understanding, or from now on I will just say it, scene understanding, comes from visual surveillance. So it's used a lot for security guards, like detecting abandoned objects in airports, detecting pickpockets in the subways, or it's also been used for detection of people that are drowning in the pool. In the industry, in addition to using video scene understanding for security guards, of course, it also can be used for accounting or process control. In traffic, it can be used for speeding detection, automatic license plate reader, congestion detection, and so on. And then finally, one of the use is also come from detection of military targets, for example, at the border of the country. Now, with this broad application in visual surveillance, the problem is that the growth of cameras that are put in place in different places, it doesn't growth of the people that are actually monitoring it behind doesn't follow the growth of the camera that they put in place. So this calls for automatic process. But the application does not only come from surveillance. this is another example from autonomous vehicles. So in China, they've used this for, they put camera in the train line, so that if, because the train is unmanned, so there is no person driving the train. So if there is a strange object along the line, it means it's a little bit of a danger, so the train will slow down by, automatically. Self-driving cars. So in self-driving cars or autonomous cars, the modules are typically vision modules using cameras. There are also the localization modules. Now, the use of video scene understanding comes from the visual module, where the cameras capturing the scene are used to do obstacle detection, basically what are the objects in front of the car, ahead of the cars. Like here, for example. Here is like a garage or a wall. In front of it, there's also this person as an obstacle and so on. Another use for the vision module relating to the video scene understanding is the lane detection. So how to make the car basically stays on the lane and not to go sideways. Another use is potentially coming from the behavioral ecology conservation studies. So the researchers in there, they are interested in observing the behavior of animals. So what we can see in a lot of documentaries in National Geographic is that they actually go there and then monitor the animals. The problem with that is, well, yes, the analysis is reliable because the researchers are there and they monitor and they know what they're interested about. But it's rarely sustainable for a long period of time. So what they started to do is they actually put cameras on the animal, so that this is a footage from one of a documentary of National Geographic. So they actually put cameras onto the animal and then let the camera record hours and hours of what the animal is going through. For example, like this, it's just swimming and there are like fishes around and so on. And later they will collect this video and then go on the hours of recording and see what are the interesting points. This is the on-body sensors, which is not always applicable. So another way is to use passive sensing. So this can be applicable in a zoo, for example. They put cameras somewhere and then monitor the behavior of the animal. Here's an example where they put a thermal camera to monitor the behavior, nocturnal behavior of the giraffes. Here, there's also a need for video automatic, let's say, video scene understanding. But the need is more for summarization, because let's say we have recorded 50 hours of a seal swimming somewhere, and for like 2 hours, it's just swimming without doing anything. So the problem is similar with the surveillance, but just in a way that, okay, not a lot of things are interesting, so how to make the computer summarize what are the interesting part, and then after that, give it to the experts to analyze. Another application, she's called Pepper. She's a robot that's made to identify movements and recognize emotions, so it's been used in retail to help the customers and then to greet the customers and so on. It has 3D camera and 2D cameras installed around its head. Another project in robotic is called Project Romeo. So the aim for this is to make a robot that's able to do monitoring process, and then the aim is also to make human machine interaction functions. So ideally, it would be used for accompanying the elderly. I say, well, if it's okay, the old person needs help carrying the water or something like that, or like fall detection and so on. So in this, it also calls for automatic detection. automatic videos in understanding. So after all those potential of applications in a wide variety of fields, it sounds very nice and promising, but what do we have to do actually to be able to achieve or to make the computer understand? Because to us, everything that's been explained so far, yeah, I understand what's happening, I know what to do and so on, but how do we make that happen for the computer? Here is the general step. So from sensing, from a camera, then you have to do all these different steps. And then for visual surveillance, all these steps are ideally done in real time. And then in the end, it's the response. I will go through these steps in the coming slides. So this is the presentation outline. Mainly there will be the step-by-step video understanding, the algorithms and so on, and then I will give a brief example of applications. So the first one is motion detection. Sorry. What's the aim of motion detection? Let's say we have this this image, this video snippet, and the aim of motion detection is to separate which are the background, which are just the environment that's not moving, and then the moving objects. And then generally also, if we have more than one moving object, we want to know, okay, which ones are, let's say, the cars, which ones are the bananas or the tomatoes, and so on. So motion detection generally encompasses these three points from environment modeling to detect the background, and then detecting the moving objects, that's motion segmentation, and then if there are more objects, then it's object classification. I have this three general steps of the motion detection in here. So this is the first algorithm that I'm going to briefly explain. So background subtraction, in this algorithm, it has the two things in it together. So it has the environment modeling and the motion segmentation. But it comes to the assumption is that background subtraction assumes a rigorously fixed camera, and then the background is also fixed, so there's no moving allowed, even though it's... yeah, we'll come to it later. How it works is that basically for every current frames that you're interested about, you have... the background reference, so you just do subtraction to it, and it's if it's above a certain threshold, then we say that in that pixel there is a movement. Now the problem with this is the real life scenario. Your camera, it's difficult to make sure your camera doesn't move even though slightly. In the background, there could be, if it's in the beach, then you have the waves moving, the trees, the leaves are moving, and so on. So it's difficult for the background subtraction to deal with this. Also, just slight illumination change, because in the pixel, then it's a change of value, even though for us, we know it's there's just illumination change. It's going from like yellowish to daily light. Yeah. The common strategies to deal with all this problem is that instead of strictly limiting the changes for the pixel is that it uses models such as Gaussian distribution for each pixel. So it's allowed to have changes to some degrees or to use a distance function. The second algorithm in this group for motion detection is called temporal differencing. The main difference from this than the previous one is that instead of having a background reference image, here the subtraction is done to the previous several previous frames. So in this case, it's better in the performance in dealing with dynamic, more dynamic backgrounds, but then also it's still not able to deal with significant camera movement. So if it's just a slight jitter, then it's fine. But if it's the camera suddenly falls down or something, then it's of course not going to work. The third one is optical flow based. So this is a more advanced algorithm for environment modeling plus motion segmentation. So what it does is that it detects moving objects using what we call optical flow, which is the characteristics of flow vectors. It's an approximation of motion from the 3D points to the actually the image plane. So here the main advantage is that it's able to detect moving objects separate from the camera movement. But then of course the limitation is that it's reported that it's computationally complex, and then in order to be able to reach real-time performance, then it requires specialized hardware. And then it's also reported to be sensitive to noise. Another algorithm in this category of motion segmentation is mathematical morphology based. So if we recall the background subtraction, the background model in that algorithm is generally done by computing the median or the mean of the raw pixel values. In the morphology based, instead of computing the mean or median of the raw pixel values, is that first it computes gradient, where gradient means an image where it detects changes in the pixel values spatially. So the instead of doing median and mean in the raw pixel values, it does it for the gradient. Here is I give you some image example. So here's the current frame. Here is the median estimated background. So for the original background subtraction, it does right away subtracting these two things, and then this is the background subtraction result. So the white objects are the moving parts. The rest are the background. Maybe it's not too clear, but if we observe the current frame compared to the background, this person that's here is actually not moving. So it's just two people that moved slightly. And here it detects three movements in just looking at these two static frames. With the morphology based, it first computes the gradient from the background, and then it also computes the gradient from the current frame, and then do subtraction on the gradient images, and then it gets only the two person that are moving as the object, the moving objects, and this is not detected as moving objects. So basically the advantages of the mathematical morphology base is that it's less sensitive to illumination changes, it's more robust to false positives, and it doesn't require training phase because every time you just compute the gradient. So now the last step of the motion detection is the object classification. That's basically where we have multiple moving objects and we want to classify which one are cars, which one are pedestrians, and so on. It's about the features. So first group comes from where they only consider the static features. Now, with the static features, it's just just a fixed static frame that you are caring about, and then you compute for the objects that you detect are moving. For example, the texture descriptors, the gradient, or the SIFT features. But another feature is actually using the temporal information. So, for example, these two images show that for one fixed frame, if there's a person riding a bicycle, and then in another frame it's one person riding a motorcycle, then the shape in one fixed frame is pretty much the same. But you get the information that the other one is actually a bicycle and not a motorcycle because of the movement of the feet. So that movement information is captured from the temporal space. So some proposed features that are out there are intensity differences over time or using the optical flow that I have explained before. Okay, so now is the second step in the video scene understanding is actually tracking the object now that we have discarded the background because we're not interested in them. We have detected the motions and we have detected what are the objects that are in there. What we want to do is we want to track the objects over the frames. It typically involves matching objects in consecutive frames using features. Here's just an illustration using the image that I showed you before. There are these five people in costumes, and with the object tracking, you want to follow these five people across the different frames. So the common objectives in this step is that we want to achieve real-time process. We want also to be able to handle occlusion. Here's one algorithm that does the object tracking. It's called active contour-based tracking. So it follows the objects that we're interested in by the shape. So, for example, here it's a Mickey Mouse head, and here's a person. So the problem with this is that it's difficult to initialize because first you have to detect automatically the shape of the object you are interested about. And then it's also... So that's the main challenge. That just the first initialization, it's, for example, for us it's clear it's a Mickey Mouse head, but how does the computer detect this Mickey Mouse head? Because it's just okay here from the background subtraction, let's say we just have the position of the moving objects but not necessarily the shape. So that's the challenge for active contour based. The second way to do object tracking is by the features. So basically it follows the features across the frames, let's say. What we have to do first is, of course, feature extraction, and then we cluster the features so that we have higher level features, and then it's matching the features across the frames. We can compute the global or local features, or in a more advanced way, we can combine the local and the global features in what is called dependence graph based. So here's an example. We have this image and we compute the features in each of the different regions. And then for the different regions that we have from the motion segment motion detection, we see its relationship with the other features spatially in the image, like here, for example. So every node is not just a segment, but a segment plus its attributes. The advantages and limitations of this approach. It can achieve real-time processing, generally for both of the feature based or the more advanced dependence graph based. It can handle partial occlusion, but when the two are combined. But the limitation is that for 2D features, let's say there's a movement of the object, so it's a rotation, then it becomes difficult to recognize anymore. And then there's also poor stability dealing with occlusion. For dependence graph base, it's time consuming because matching of the graphs takes a lot of time. The third approach in object tracking is model-based tracking. So it tracks object by matching a model that is constructed offline before the process. So the main idea is that we have this model, which could be rigid objects, such as vehicle, because it the movements are very limited, or the human limbs. This is the non-rigid objects, because for us, the movements, we can move their hands and then the feet and so on. But generally, the model-based tracking works by first constructing the model, and then based on this model, we can do representation of the prior knowledge. This comes as the constraints, let's say. For example, for our hands, maybe we can do, well, not really 360 degrees and so on. So the representation of prior knowledge can come in as a constraint. And then the problem of model-based tracking comes as a prediction and search problem. We come into the first modeling. This is the non-rigid motion. Like here, for example, is the human body. So here are two example of the models that are used. So human body is first modeled as a stick figure. So here's the example. So basically the sticks or the lines are the human body parts, and then the links or the vertex are the joints. With the 2D contour, instead of just lines, it's 2D ribbons or blobs. A more advanced model is the volumetric model. So this was developed because the 2D models require restriction on the viewing angle. Let's say we have a model of the hand. We know this is hand, but then if the viewing angle changes like this, then is it still a hand from that point of view? So that's the limitation for the 2D models that were previously mentioned. So with the volumetric model, we have these two examples that the human body parts are represented as cylinders, cones, or spheres, and so on. But then, of course, this comes with more parameters, and it's more expansive in terms of the computational time and complexity. So we have seen three models for the human body. So now how do we represent the prior knowledge? But first, because this problem now is now becomes a prediction and search strategies. So basically, with all this different combination of possible motion with the prior knowledge, we can limit the search space. So here is an example that why human limbs and joints models are widely used. It's because, for example, for our feet, there are only a certain degree of motion that we can do. So it already helps in the searching procedure. So in the end, because the search space is reduced, then it helps in terms of time. Because again, this process ideally is done in real time process. Now here is model-based tracking for rigid objects like vehicles, for example. Generally, vehicles are modeled by the so-called 3D wireframe vehicle models. Here's an example of it. And the prior knowledge for this 3D wireframe is that we know that cars are supposed to move on a ground plane. So that can be the prior knowledge for the search process. And then there's also certain translation and rotation parameters that are possible. Now, the search problem for the rigid objects is the 3D pose search. So basically, we have the model, and then because the model are 3D, so how do we project the 3D model into the image plane, and then how do we correspond the points in our 3D model into the image plane, and then finally, how do we estimate, okay, in this 2D image plane, which side of the car are we looking at? But the idea is that we are still able to recognize that that is a car, even though we just see from 2D plane that it's just the back of the car. Advantages and limitations of the model-based tracking is that, of course, because we have 3D knowledge of the objects, it will have better results under occlusion. It can be applied when objects change orientation because we have the 3D models and we search for the pose of the objects. So it doesn't matter if it changes orientation. And then for the human body tracking, the structures of human body, how it can move, and so on, it really limits the search space. The limitation, of course, is we have to construct the model. It's highly costly in terms of computational time. And then, because before we have seen the 2D models as well, the restriction is really in the viewing angle. After detecting the motions, tracking the objects, now we have to have a sort of higher level understanding. I will go briefly through this. So there can be two points, and I'm going to one of the higher level understanding, which is the behavior understanding and how the behavior that can be understood is described, or let's say knowledge representation. So the behavior understanding can be seen as a classification of time-varying feature data. So basically, it's a matching between a reference that we have and the unknown sequence that we want to know about. Here, it becomes a learning task, the features and so on. There are multitudes of learning algorithms, hidden Markov models, self-organizing map, the currently very famous deep learning, and so on. After the learning procedure, then we have to describe sometimes the behavior that's learned by the system with a natural language, because sometimes it's necessary for the operators that will still need to be behind, like for example the summarization of the animal observation, because it will still need to come to the experts. So at times we need to describe the object behavior in natural languages. Here I put three ways that I could find how to link the natural language and computer vision. First is using statistical models. For example, like the Bayesian network, the challenge with this is that it requires a large amount of prior knowledge in order to be optimal. The second way is the ontology and formalized reasoning. So the ontology is used to represent prior structural knowledge, like what are in the scene, is it a human, is it like parts of the human body, and so on. And then the formalized reasoning, like description logic, is used to recognize and classify the objects. And people also have started using deep learning to make sense of the were there in the scene and then describe it as a natural language or the language that we human understand? Is it a dog running, a dog catching balls or something like that? Here's another point of the higher level understanding, which is typically used for applications such as in visual surveillance. So the idea is that when you have an area that's under surveillance and there is a moving object which is a person, you want to track not only track this person but also recognize whose face is that, whose movement is that. So the main biometric features are used are human face and the gait or the movement of the limbs. In the face recognition, there are these parts that in itself is a big topic for detecting that it's a face, tracking the face over the frames, and then face feature detection to actually detect whose face is this. And then the gait recognition. There's the model-based gait recognition in which basically the lengths of the limbs are calculated or the angular speed and so on. There is also the physical parameter-based, which it's computes the geometrical structural properties of the human body. The problem with the gait recognition is that it's highly depends on how well it can localize that there's a human body moving, and then also like the tracking algorithm performance. I will come now to the second part of the presentation, which is two brief examples of application of the video scene understanding. First is feature-based motion detection. So the purpose of the study was to monitor nocturnal behavior of giraffes and then in the end to summarize the hours and hours of recording into as short as possible so that the experts doesn't have to look at the entire video. Because they were interested in nocturnal video, so the problem with nocturnal behavior, the problem is that with traditional color camera at night, we have very low recognition. So for example, in here, there are the trees, there are the giraffes, but it's difficult to differentiate between the trees and the giraffes or maybe other structures in the image. So instead of using the traditional color imaging, they use thermal cameras. And so it's here, it's better visibility for the actual animal that we're interested about or the backgrounds or the trees that are occluding the animals. The problem is formulated as so the giraffes can be seen as really non-rigid objects. So that the neck can be moving anywhere. But actually the visual characteristic is the long neck, which can have movements. But then they separate the problem into two-stage detection, head and body, and then after that, the neck, because generally the head and body doesn't really move. So, features for the rigid body parts. That's the head and the body. These are the six features. Here's the example. The intensity image. The gradient magnitude. Again, gradient detects changes in the image. So, here it's an edge image. Or histogram of oriented gradients and the result of the background subtraction, which is a binary map, where the black part is the background, and here the white part is the moving objects. What they did, then they feed these features into a linear SVM, and did the classification which ones are the head, which ones are the body. False head detections comes from basically other animals which probably have the same more or less size and shape for the head, or background structures such as rocks. False body detections usually comes from other animals or animals that are clustered together, because the body of the giraffe is larger in size in terms of compared to the head. Now, for the detection of the neck, because the neck is basically, apart from the legs, are the parts that are moving. So here what's interesting is that it computes the features of the neck as spatial relationship between the head that was detected before and the body. And the way they explain the prior knowledge is that, okay, one head can only match with one body. There's also a distance threshold. So if here's the head that I want to match with one body, then it's not possible that the matching body is around here. So that's where they use the distance threshold. They also use cost matrix to compute the likelihood of one body to match with the one head. The tracking, they basically did temporal differencing with variations in the number of frames. So, and then the summarization is basically just discarding the typical behaviors that they know already, and the atypical behaviors that they actually want to summarize is detected by, okay, this is the atypical behavior happens when the head detection fails, because they assume that, okay, the head is not detected anywhere, so maybe it's either occluded or doing something that's unusual. Another example, deep learning for autonomous driving. So the idea is that we have image sequences, we have to make the system learn, and then we have only four driving actions, like right, left, accelerate, or brake. So what they did was they have the specific setting that it's a highway setting, highway driving, so there's only one way of traffic, and then three kinds of lanes, 1, 2, 3 lanes, and then different positions of the cars. And then the affordance indicator is basically which tells the car where you can move and so on, is by computing distance to the lane markings, this one, and then distance to the other cars. The training, they did the training by having a human driver play 12 hours of video game, and then they did screenshots and corresponding labels and so on. And then for the test, they took real driving videos taken by a smartphone camera. And generally, the performance was said to be the lane perception or lane detection works quite well. But for the obstacle detection, it's quite noisy. And they said it's probably because the models of the car in the game are different from what it's the cars in reality. To summarize, this has been the general workflow of video scene understanding from the sensing until the understanding and then the response. Challenges or tasks for each part, here it's color-coded. So for the green part is for the motion detection. The challenge is generally the movement of the camera, illumination changes, noise, and so on. For the object tracking, the problem is occlusion, or also computational complexity for the model-based tracking, for example, and then for 3D post-recovery for the 3D models. For the higher level understanding, it's generally formulated as a classification or learning problem, and there is also the issue of knowledge representation, which is connecting natural language processing, which is another field, and the field of computer vision.